congressional committee investigating the January 6th attacks on the U.S. Capitol is moving to get documents and testimony from former President Donald Trump and his advisors. In a lawsuit filed Monday, Trump argues that many of those records are shielded by executive privilege, a protection that lets administrations keep at least some of their records and communications private. And that's been used as far back as George Washington. We're taking a closer look now at executive privilege, how it works, what it covers, and what it does not. You can join in at 800-642-1234. In general, how transparent should presidents and their advisors be? How much access should the public have to their internal communications? How about ex-presidents? How much should they be allowed to keep secret? And do you see this investigation by this House committee on January 6th and then the events leading up to it important enough to justify more access to that kind of communication? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science at law and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again. My pleasure.
Can you give us the 101 on executive privilege? Why do we have it? What does it do?
Okay, what executive privilege is basically grounded in the concept of separation of powers. You know, each branch of government, executive, legislative, judicial, has certain powers that they have. And what the Supreme Court has said, and the most famous case about this is U.S. versus Nixon, which was all about Nixon's, you know, tape conversations at the White House. What the court has said is that executive privilege does exist. It's kind of a protection for privileged conversations that the president and the executive branch may need to have in order to what? To do their job. So the court said in U.S. versus Nixon that executive privilege exists. However, what the court said, it's not absolute. And in many cases, the court has said that executive privilege may need to give way to what needs of a criminal investigation. And that was the court in U.S. versus Nixon, may need to give way to criminal investigations or efforts to try to understand if there's been what wrongdoing in the executive branch. So again, basic concept, executive privilege is an idea of giving some privileged communications to the White House and the president. However, in many cases, as the court has said, it may have to give to other important needs.
Now, if I search for the phrase executive privilege in the Constitution, correct me if I'm wrong, I won't find it there. But as you were saying, it derives from that separation of powers, and it came up as a concept, not necessarily with those exact words, under our first president. So this does go way back.
It does go way back. Okay, the way that we would find executive privilege found in the Constitution will be what we call the vesting clauses. Article 1, Section 1 vests legislative power in the House and Senate. Article 2, Section 1 says executive power vested in the president. Article 3, Section 1 vests judicial power in the Supreme Court et al. So it's in the concept of the vesting clauses for our purposes. Article 2, Section 1, where executive privilege is located, and you're absolutely correct. It goes all the way back to George Washington saying that there's certain things that take place within the executive branch that the other branches of government should not have privy to. They should not be able to sort of get that information. Again, the idea being that a president should enjoy the confidence of his staff that certain communications may not be revealed to others for fear that what? If they knew they were going to be revealed, they might not be quite as candid with the president in terms of advice.
We are talking about executive privilege, what it is, what it does, how it applies to the January 6th commission. David Schultz is with us from Hamline University and the University of Minnesota. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions, or email ideas@WPR.org. David, let's take it to that January 6th committee. I said commission. It's a committee. But the issues coming up now, they have subpoenas for somebody like Steve Bannon. They are looking for documents, this committee is. President Trump says, nope, executive privilege, you don't get access to it. Can you look at the argument, first of all, from the former president about why executive privilege, he says, should apply here?
Well, for the former president's position would be that what? We'll take the concept of executive privilege and say that what? He was gathering information from his advisors or saying things to his advisors under the belief that this would not be disclosed to the public. And again, there's a sense of candidness there. I think that's part of the argument. Second, I think he wants to implicitly argue that disclosing this information to Congress would violate, again, his right as a president, as well as a chief executive. Now, I suspect he might try to make some other arguments here also, but that's going to be the core argument, that he as president, as when he was president, he might not have had to been able to turn this material over to Congress. But now as ex-president, he should still have that same right.
One of the arguments against that, as I understand it, David, is executive privilege is supposed to apply to their duties as president. This committee could say, well, hold on, it's not your duty as president to try to overturn the results of the election so you could stay president. That's outside of what should be covered by executive privilege. Is there a valid argument there?
A little bit, but I think there's a couple of stronger arguments. Again, I want to go back to U.S. versus Nixon, where the Supreme Court said we have to weigh the competing needs of executive privilege and the right of confidentiality against, at least in that case, it was what a subpoena being issued and the needs of the criminal justice process to do its job. Here, you can make the argument and say we have to weigh the scales between what the president's privilege is, or I'm going to say ex-president's privileges versus congressional needs. The second thing that I think is very important here to understand, remember, he's the ex-president of the United States, not the current president. Once he stepped out of office, he may no longer be able to claim executive privilege. It is now up to Joe Biden to claim executive privilege since he's the person who's in possession of those documents. And much in the same way, for example, if you're in a private business, a private corporation, if a CEO leaves and is replaced by another CEO, the new CEO can basically release conversations that took place involving the previous one. So same thing here. I think Trump has a difficult road ahead of him, not impossible, but to say that as an ex-president, he gets to invoke executive privilege. I think it's the privilege of Joe Biden to invoke, and whether or not he wants to release the information about the presidency, including the ex-president, to Congress.
We're talking to David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's with us for a look at executive privilege, how it works, its limitations, and how it applies to the House January 6th committee, looking for information from the previous Trump administration, legal challenges from that administration. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Should, for example, the former president be forced to share documents and communication about January 6th, or should the National Archives be required to release those to the Congressional Committee? Are the things you think presidents should be allowed to keep secret? What fits into that category? What questions do you have about how this all works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our look at former President Donald Trump's claims of executive privilege in the investigation into January 6th and the planning that went into it. David Schultz stays with us from Hamline University and the University of Minnesota. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have general thoughts or questions about executive privilege and how it works, or specific ones about how it relates to the January 6th investigation, you can join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to give a listen to what we heard from the House Select Committee investigating January 6th this week. This is Republican Representative Liz Cheney, one of two Republicans on the commission, talking about Steve Bannon and former President Trump's executive privilege claims.
Mr. Bannon's and Mr. Trump's privilege arguments do, however, appear to reveal one thing. They suggest that President Trump was personally involved in the planning and execution of January 6th. And this committee will get to the bottom of that.
So Representative Cheney is saying the refusal to testify these executive privilege claims maybe indicate the kind of behavior that the committee is looking for. What do you think of that argument?
I'm always hesitant to say that somebody not wanting to say something is proof of guilt. Remember, at one time during the 1950s, when people were invoking their Fifth Amendment rights not to testify before the McCarthy hearings, that was tantamount to guilt. So I'm not willing to go quite that far. I'm willing to give, let's say, you know, President Trump the benefit of the doubt and say that he's making a sincere argument to say that I don't believe this information should be released because what? Because as president of the United States, it was protected and shielded by the Constitution. Now Liz Cheney, Representative Cheney, may be making a good political argument. She may be suggesting that what? That the stuff implicates him. And in that sense, I think when I listened to her, she was drawing a parallel, I think, to U.S. versus Nixon, where with Nixon, the tapes did eventually reveal his complicity, his direction in terms of many things. I think she's hinting at that. We don't know. And I think part of the commission, I guess commission or committee, I forgot what it is also, committee that's looking into this, that's what they're trying to figure out. I hate to use the phrase here, but I'll use it. What did Trump know and when did he know it and what involvement did he have in it? I think that's what she's alluding to.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Gary is with us in Iron River. Hi, Gary.
Hi, good afternoon, folks. I'm putting all the politics aside. It seems to me if you accept the concept of executive privilege's purpose to ensure candid and confidential conversations happen, the timing of when they're disclosed doesn't matter. Whether you disclose them when the administration is in power or after the administration leaves, it's going to serve to tamp down the willingness of any people in an administration in power to speak that way for fear that it all could be disclosed once they're gone.
Gary, thanks for the call. Interesting point, and that would point, David, toward the argument that ex-presidents should be better covered with executive privilege because if you're worried about a conversation coming out now, you might be worried about it in 3 years.
I think it's a very good point here. I mean, again, I think if we looked at executive privilege in an absolute, just kind of like in a glass jar by itself, I think it's an exceedingly good argument to make. But again, for good or for bad, the U.S. Supreme Court has said, we have to look at it in terms of other competing objectives. And I'm going to also argue that we saw in another famous case, Nixon versus Administrator of General Services, which is also a case about taking the presidential papers and information and giving them to the National Archive, is that the court has said there may be a point that also in the interest of history, in the interest of disclosure for people who have a right to know about what their government is doing, that at some point we weigh executive privilege with the right of the public to know, and how does it balance out? And so at the end of the day, we're looking at here, many competing, values. And the courts so far, again, between Nixon versus General Services, U.S. versus Nixon, have weighed on the side of what? Disclosure, and not on the side of concealment.
Thanks for that call. I want to get into one specific angle here, David. Steve Bannon formerly had a White House position back in 2017. This committee wants him to testify. He says no. They're issuing a subpoena. President Trump says executive privilege. These all my former people don't have to testify. But at the point of now and in early January, Steve Bannon wasn't an official. He was a guy. Does executive privilege apply to him?
No, it doesn't. And even if he were a government official at that time, it's not clear that if executive privilege extends beyond what? The president of the United States. I know in one of my classes, I talk about this, that the court has said clearly presidents have executive privilege. Maybe there's something in terms of maybe a vice president or something tighter like that. But the courts have generally said that this is really something surrounding the president of the United States, and they've been hesitant to expand it beyond that person or that office. And so I think, again, it's going to be very hard, not impossible, but very hard given the existing law for Steve Bannon and other White House officials to be able to invoke executive privilege for not testifying. Now, could they invoke potentially a Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination? Yes, but I think it's relatively, at least right now with the existing law, unlikely that the executive privilege argument applies to them or would be applicable here.
Let's go back to our callers now. Bruce is with us in Cumberland. Bruce, hi.
Hi. I just remember a time where Donald Trump had said, and I quote, anyone who pleads the Fifth Amendment is guilty. And so by him constructing that argument and saying that there is weight to that argument, then for him to plead the Fifth or take executive privilege, which is presidential confidentiality, and it could be the case that it's not to incriminate himself.
Bruce, thanks for the call. What do you think, David?
Well, I don't know, you know, and I'll take the reader for truth there that at some point Donald Trump said that about the Fifth Amendment. I don't recall it myself.
I just pulled it up. He did say that at some point early in his presidency.
Okay, fair enough. I just wanted to be sure. Okay, but assuming he did say that there, again, I'm you know, personally hesitant, and I think the law ought to be hesitant in terms of saying that invoking your constitutional rights is tantamount, you know, to guilt or acknowledgement of guilt. We may reach inferences of that, but from a constitutional perspective, if we're saying that we live in a society of presumption of innocence and the government bears the burden to prove guilt, we probably can't hold that view, even if many of us, I think, secretly suspect that he might be hiding something. I'm not saying I do, but many people do.
Thanks for that call. And just our last minute, David, what are you watching for next in this installment in the saga of executive privilege?
Well, what I'm going to be looking to see at this point, a couple different things. Obviously, we're going to look to see what the Justice Department does now with Steve Bannon. If I remember correctly, late this afternoon, the House voted for contempt of holding Bannon in contempt. So that's going to unfurl. And then we're going to see a court hearing at this point also regarding Donald Trump's claims. And I think what I'm going to look at is to see how they affect those trade-offs. Do they say that an ex-president, a person no longer in office, can they invoke executive privilege? If so, that's a pretty significant extension of executive privilege compared to what we think it is right now.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you to all the listeners.
We've been talking to David Schultz. He's a professor of political science and law at Hamline University, also professor of law at the University of Minnesota. We've been talking about the concept of executive privilege, the origins of it in American constitutional law, what it means for a president and a president's staff and their ability to not disclose certain information about their internal communications to Congress, and where the limits are, plus how it applies to the January 6th committee in the House, their investigations, and their subpoena efforts.